to KBOO Portland.
KBOO's Metal Marathon, the Metal March, is back once again. And that means brand new metal merch. Go to kboo.fm/metal to check out all KBOO's new metal merch, featuring exclusive artwork provided by local tattoo artist and musician at Unicron Artworks. This year's Metal Marathon is live on KBOO, Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m. through Saturday, March 15th at 6 a.m. Get your very own limited edition 2025 Metal March Metal Merch and listen to every installment of the Metal Marathon at kboo.fm/metal and support metal on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Pacifica Radio in San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, manufacturing anti-Semitism and the destruction of the American University. We'll speak with Richard Silverstein of Tikkun Olam. Also, the devastating impacts of shuttering the Department of Education. And Robert Chesney, prominent media scholar, free press co-founder, dogged defender of democracy and free speech, dies at 72. Norman Solomon helps us remember. All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. This is your daily investigative news magazine. You hear it on KPFA Pacifica Radio every weekday from 5 to 6. We are free speech, nonprofit, no holes barred, non-corporate. Let me say that again, non-corporate radio. Yeah, free speech radio. We begin this hour with an old friend of the show, Richard Silverstein. He writes on security and other issues at Tikkun Olam and for numerous other outlets. Richard, you've been doing some pretty interesting writing and thinking about, what's really happening and the, shall we say, the manufacturing of anti-Semitism, a very powerful phrase. Why don't you start there? What do you mean? And give us examples of how they are, Jews are manufacturing anti-Semitism and their supporters.
Well, let's go back to the campus anti-war movement, the pro-Palestine movement on campuses around the country. Those protests, those encampments featured students who were American students and foreign students and Jewish students, Muslim students, all variety, very diverse group. There was some pushback from the pro-Israel community at the time. Of course, there was pushback from university presidents who, at Columbia, for example, invited the police who arrested hundreds of students. And then the encampments towards the end of the school year kind of drifted away. But in the interim, and since Donald Trump has become president, all of this backlash has become weaponized and magnified a hundredfold. There is a movement among pro-Israel groups in the Jewish community that has accused the presidents of the Ivy League universities and had them dragged before congressional committees, and three of the Ivy League presidents eventually were sacked because the campuses, the administrators weren't viewed as tough enough in stopping the protests and combating so-called anti-Semitism. So now what's happened is that the groups, the Jewish pro-Israel groups I mentioned, have the ear of Donald Trump and they have the ear of the Justice Department and the Department of Education as long as it lasts. And they have weaponized anti-Semitism. They have notified 60 different universities. They will be investigating them for alleged claims that they harbor anti-Semites on campus. And all of those universities have reacted with fear and trepidation, and most of them have capitulated to these investigations. And Columbia is sort of like the canary in the coal mine here, because once it found out that Trump was going to withhold $400 million in research funding from the university, the Trump administration put forth 9 conditions that it demanded Columbia agree to if it was to even start negotiating about resuming the funding. Columbia essentially caved to all of the 9 conditions. Basically, the trustees of the university were the ones who directed the administrators, including the president, to capitulate. The university agreed that it would put the Middle East Studies Center in receivership, and that police would be hired who could arrest students, and that students could no longer wear masks, and if they did, they would be arrested or expelled from the university. So it's not just Columbia, though. From there, these pro-Israel groups started doxing faculty and students who had been involved with the encampments, faculty members, many of whom had been working, teaching at their universities for decades, were fired, and ICE started basically kidnapping graduate students who these pro-Israel groups had doxed and designated as anti-Semitic. And that's where the State Department got involved and revoked student visas and even arrested and imprisoned students who were here legally and ignored judicial rulings protecting these students. So we have this situation where American universities have come under fire and they have not reacted in solidarity with each other, and they essentially have capitulated. And the knock-on effect of this is that the students, the foreign students, will no longer want to attend American universities. Even American students will not want to attend universities where they can't speak freely about political issues. And by the way, the attempt to police this speech is a violation of the U.S. Constitution. So you have the Trump administration basically eviscerating the American university and everything that it stood for hundreds of years. Remember, Columbia was founded in 1754. It has never faced the overwhelming force of the federal government and the destructive power of the government as it has now. And in 8 months, it has lost 2 presidents. It's now on its 3rd president. And I don't see how American universities can recover from this, especially since they haven't united. There have been no statements from universities. Everybody is on their own to try to fight back against the federal government. And it's really heartbreaking. I've spent 12 years on campuses in Israel, the United States, graduate and undergraduate studies, and I have always felt at home in universities, and I can't say that any longer, and it just is heartbreaking to watch.
It really is an extraordinary moment in history, but we must be talking about it, and we have to understand it. Speaking of understanding it, we're speaking with Richard Silverstein. He blogs at Tikkun Olam. He knows a great deal about what goes on in Israel and how it relates to the United States and the rest of the world. We're talking about, a crackdown and a concept that I find compelling and troubling, manufacturing anti-Semitism. Why don't you talk about that in the context of the by now well-known case of Mahmoud Khalil, who was kidnapped. This is somebody with a green card, a postgraduate student, I think, from Columbia. And, everybody knows he was just kidnapped, and he's in a jail in down south.
So Mahmoud Khalil was a leader of the campus anti-war movement at Columbia. He actually wasn't a leader, but he did act as spokesperson. He negotiated with the administration to try to come to an understanding about the encampments, and that failed. And so he became a poster child that was attacked by these pro-Israel groups that I mentioned. And from there, ICE decided to make an example, and he was the first foreign student who was targeted. And he was basically arrested in his residence in New York. The university, by the way, did not come to his defense, nor has any university come to the defense of any of their own students who have been disappeared, kidnapped, and imprisoned and sent to, off to Louisiana, which is basically the equivalent of a an immigrant concentration camp. And now you have three or four of these foreign students from different universities, all in Louisiana, and all brought there in violation of judicial restraint, which said that ICE had no right to do that, and it did it anyway. But I want to go back to the encampments, because the opposition to the war in Gaza, the opposition to the genocide being committed there, has now been declared to be anti-Semitic. The protesters, including these students, Brown at Tufts, at Columbia, and Georgetown, have been called pro-Hamas and also terrorists. They're called terrorists because they oppose a war. They oppose a genocide. This is now called anti-Semitism. And this is why I call it manufacturing anti-Semitism, because this is a flagrant violation of the definition of anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is about hatred of Jews as Jews. It's about violence against Jews. It's about the Holocaust. It's about, you know, the genocide against Jews. It is not about political speech. It is not about criticizing Israel. It is not about supporting Palestinian rights and opposing ethnic cleansing. This is a distortion, and it's also a desecration of the memory of the 6 million Jews who were killed because of Nazi anti-Semitism and because of Nazi genocide. And we now have a government in this country which is declaring that political speech protected by the First Amendment is supporting terrorism. It's just shocking that this should happen, and it's shocking that the American people aren't up in arms about this. The polls say that the people, the American people, are not generally opposed to Trump's immigration policy and what he's doing to these students. So we have a country where the people themselves who elected Donald Trump are not opposing the worst fascistic elements of his program, which is done in collaboration with these Jewish groups, these pro-Israel groups. And I liken it to, this is a very strong statement, but I liken it to, in the terms of the Nazis in World War II, paying collaborators bounty money to betray Jews who were in hiding. This is what these pro-Israel groups are doing. They are bounty hunters who are doxing legitimate students with legitimate rights of speech, and then throwing them to the wolves so they can be kidnapped and sent into prisons and basically disappeared, because for days at a time, the loved ones of these students and the supporters of these students and the lawyers for these students don't know where they are. And for many days, we didn't know where Mahmoud Khalil was. And now we know he's in Louisiana with several others of these students, because that's where ICE can deport them from, because of the courts down there not interfering. So we have this horrendous situation, and I think really it's the rise of fascism in the United States, which I'm sorry really that I have to go that far to say that, but that's what it is.
No, that is not an exaggeration, and we could see structurally that Trump is moving in that direction in terms of the seizing of the power through the presidential declarations, as opposed to a democracy, a working democracy. And, you know, I've always had a lot of criticism about politicians, Democratic and Republican, but we are watching the emergence of fascism. It's troubling. Richard, talk a little bit more about the specifics of how MAGA and the pro-Israeli groups are sort of combining as a new source of right-wing fascist power.
Well, there's a couple of groups that are worth mentioning here. One is called Canary Mission. It was founded by a Los Angeles real estate guy who, by the way, is a convicted ex-felon and convicted of tax fraud. And he's created lots of different vehicles which fund pro-Israel astroturf groups. Canary Mission is known for compiling a dossier on hundreds of university students, mostly Palestinian or Muslim, and some of them American, non-Muslim, you know, American students, Anglo students, and trying to get them fired, trying to cause them to their careers to be sabotaged, and basically, as I said before, they're a sort of a bounty hunter group, and these dossiers are then sent to Congress, they're sent to the Department of Education, they're sent to the State Department, and because they joined these encampments, the State Department has declared them to be damaging U.S. foreign policy. That's one of the provisions of the laws under which they have revoked green cards and visas to these students. So you have Canary Mission, you have another one called Beitar, which is an offshoot of the Likud, the Israeli political party that has dominated Israel's right-wing politics for decades. And Beitar has taken the dossiers to Congress and met with Congress members and told these Congress members they must act to get rid of these students. You have Barry Weiss, that's a name that will be familiar to many of you, who at one time worked at the New York Times and since then has been a spokesperson and a key figure in the pro-Israel MAGA movement, and again exploiting and weaponizing anti-Semitism as a political tool, a political cudgel to use to advance MAGA politics in the name of anti-Semitism. So that's this dirty alliance that's happened between the pro-Israel groups and the MAGA Republicans, where they sort of have this insidious symbiotic relationship where they each use each other for their own interests.
We just have a minute or two, but just as a overview and a way of some connecting tissue, how does all that we've been talking about here play back into the genocide that continues to unfold? Does what's going on here work in support of that genocide?
Absolutely. It's a good point that you make. The Israel lobby, and I include those groups I just mentioned, supporting Israel, right or wrong, has been the key defender of Israel's genocide in Gaza. And Netanyahu is delighted with diverting attention from Gaza and from the genocide. If he can make the issue about anti-Semitism, if he can undertake an assault against American universities, sort of the font of leftism in the view of Netanyahu and Trump, it diverts attention from the real issues, which is the 50,000 Gazans who've been murdered by Israel and the plans to ethnically cleanse and expel 2.5 million Gazans, which is underway, which Trump has endorsed this ethnic cleansing, and Israel is basically undertaking it. It's already expelled 300,000 Gazans from the territory and shifted them to Europe and to other continents, and it wants to eliminate them entirely. So this is really a perfidious operation that that supports genocide, Israeli genocide, which we know, by the way, Donald Trump supports it and has already funded $18 billion worth of weapons to Israel on top of the tens of billions that Biden approved as well.
And we should say, just as a little closure, despite the fact that Colombia has been crawling and begging and really setting a terrible example for students and all those who believe in learning from the fact, they still don't have a clue whether they're going to get back their $400 million. They're still crawling. No guarantees there. And they've done everything.
And they've put, go on. There's a federal task force combating anti-Semitism. That's the one that sent the 60 universities letters. They're going to send a group of regulators to Colombia, and they're going to tell Colombia, they're going to ask Colombia to respond to all these claims that it's it's allowed anti-Semitism on campus. And only if Colombia gets the approval of this witch hunt, this federal witch hunt, will it then be eligible possibly to get the $400 million. So this is really, like I said before, it's the emasculation of the American university, turning it into, if you look at what Hungary did to its universities, it made them basically, it fired all the independent administrators and got rid of faculty who were too boisterous and too oppositional, and it brought the universities to heel and turn them into instruments of the state. And that's what they're trying to do here in the United States. And it's shameful. It's just a betrayal of the entire tradition of higher education learning in this country. And I'm just sad to have to say it and heartbroken to have to say it.
Absolutely. Well, that's the voice of a good friend, Richard Silverstein, who blogs at Tikkun Olam. That's TikkunOlam. He's been doing it since 2003, and there's lots of incredible stuff that you might want to check out and learn a lot more about what's going on, particularly having to do with Israel and its role in all of this expanding, continuing genocide. Thank you, Richard, for spending the time with us.
Thank you for having me, Dennis.
You're absolutely welcome, and it's appreciated. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Short break, and we're going to talk about the folks in Washington, that guy in the White House, and their shutting down of the Department of Education and the multiple implications that's going to have for wonderful teachers and universities all over this country. Stay with us.
Help is on its way. You keep changing every day. What's that that hangs upon your face? Is there something on your mind? Does the whole so blind? What's keeping you alive this time? And how
throat, it feels just tight as it pulls you back aside. It's about keeping it alive this time.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Flashpoints is an investigative news magazine. We come to you through Pacifica Radio, KPFA, in the Bay Area. We are free speech. We take no contributions. We are listener-sponsored radio. We've been doing this since 1949, when folks realized that we would need this kind of free radio network to be able to speak truth to power. Particularly now, they anticipated this kind of situation where you have a neo-fascist in the White House, and free speech is going to be more important than ever. And this beautiful group of pacifists, people who were willing to go to jail to resist war, founded this beautiful network, KPFA, in the Bay Area. There were so few FM radios at the time that the station went on the air that they had to go around and give them out free. My understanding is maybe they only had one station on them. I'm not sure. Again, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We will be joined in one moment by a wonderful educator who's dealing with what's going on through Trump and the shutdown and the cutoff of funds for community groups, for groups of color. We're going to be speaking with Professor Alberto Pulido. Also joining us is our own Miguel Gavila Molina. Waiting for the professor to join us, Miguel. Your thoughts on the attempt to limit and shut down education for people of color, for poor people, for people, working people in this country?
Well, Dennis, it's becoming so apparent, and not just in education. This government right now, this fascist government, you know, is kind of whitewashing everything. I mean, to see them, you know, remove generals, to see them attempt to remove honored, you know, individuals that gave their life, sacrificed their life for the freedoms of this country just because they happen to be of color. It's like, is this really happening? It is. You know, there's this massive attempt to whitewash the history and deny the truth. I mean, the attacks against universities, you know, we're seeing it, and not just for free speech. You know, one of the things that has come out that really worries me is when they start talking about defunding institutions, be it, you know, universities, colleges, or even museums and libraries, or any particular group in a social service, you know, areas that have, you know, diversity, you know, equality and inclusion, DEI, as their policies to follow to make sure that there's equality for everybody. That is really troubling because it's getting closer and closer to where, you know, we're going to start seeing shutdowns of entire school districts, you know, and if there's resistance against that, denying, you know, funds to educate, you know, future generations, it's very troubling. And, absolutely, you know, persons like, you know, ourselves, I mean, we're in the free speech, you know, radio station and news and information and public affairs, all that is being brought, you know, under glass. We're in a state of crisis, Dennis, and not just constitutional, but as far as a crisis of civil society. That's what I'm seeing.
All right. You are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We are attempting to get in touch with our guest for this next segment. What I'd like to do, Mike, is, well, let's take a little musical break. Let's play Rovix. I'm in the mood for David Rovix reminding us what is happening between Israel, the United States, and the Palestinians. And I should say that despite the attention being turned to Trump in Washington and his antics, which are devastating. The slaughter, the absolute unchecked slaughter continues. Gaza is locked down. The West Bank is under full attack. It's being emptied, and it is, if it isn't fascism, then I don't know what is. This is David Rovix.
Takes their place when duty calls, for the apocalypse will be televised. I'm watching it on this screen live on camera. The Holocaust of Palestine.
All right, you are listening to Flashpoints. We are delighted to welcome to these airwaves this program for the first time, Professor Alberto Pulido. He is at the University of California, San Diego. He's on the board of the Chicano Park Museum. That's a very special place we're going to talk about. And he, Professor Alberto Pulido, teaches ethnic studies. Well, Professor, happy to have you with Miguel Gavila Molina also joining us. Tell us a little bit about, give us your general reaction to what's been going on in terms of all the threats, shutting down the education department, all the threats around arrests. We now see illegal arrests. Talk about this in terms of being in the university, what this means to you, how this has impacted on you and your students. Talk to us, please.
Yes, well, first and foremost, thank you very much for this opportunity. Wow, I mean, that's a really huge question in that things change daily and there's so much movement afoot. You know, my first reaction is this. It's taken us so many years of struggle to get to where we've been and, you know, developing these programs, which were not a part of the institution, but we're very much coming from the community and from, you know, the struggles that we were involved in and how quickly things can change. And it's very frustrating and very, very unfortunate. And so that's the thing that stays on my mind in my attempt to try to convince administrators and universities to stand up and try to, you know, take this on. And I just don't see that happening.
Your students, how's it impacting on them? What are the multiple struggles that come up out of this kind of threat and atmospheric pressure, which must be terrifying? It's for all students, but if you're worried about being disappeared or having a family member disappeared, or, you know, it's a whole other story.
Right. I would say with regards to students, a lot of trauma, a lot of insecurity, a lot of fear. They're worrying about what's going to happen to our department, what's going to happen to the work that we're doing, very much so. And, you know, their work of specialization. We actually do have undocumented students. And so that whole experience of things being escalated to other levels. We've been fine so far, but, you know, we just take one day at a time and, you know, try to do the best we can by encouraging them in our classes. We have presentations, you know, we support the students as much as we can. And the good thing is that we have a close community when it comes to our ethnic studies department, so we're able to deal with this daily and, you know, one day at a time.
Listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, Dennis Bernstein here with Miguel Gavilan Molina. Miguel, please join us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dennis, and gracias, Professor, for joining us. Professor, one of the things that really worries me, particularly the area that you're at, you're on the border, you know, the borderlands, as we call them, and, you know, close proximity to, you know, La Frontera, as we call it. Have you seen any kind of movements around the border? Have you heard anything from students as far as military or ICE building up its forces? Because that's one thing that we're beginning to get pieces of, which really concerns me. And as far as your department, ethnic studies, one of the things that I know across the state of California is, you know, DEI, diversity, equality and inclusion are primary, you know, that policy is so primary to keeping ethnic studies afloat and funded and so forth. Do you see a threat coming now that they've, you know, not just, you know, singling students or trying to suppress free speech on campuses, but, you know, a direct attack to your department or other, you know, ethnic studies programs, you know, throughout the state, you know, that have DEI? Are you seeing that? Have you heard anything? Are you preparing for an assault against the institution?
Well, thank you for that question. Appreciate that very much. What I can tell you is that we know our border is militarized. We know that the city of El Cajon, here in San Diego, which is its own municipality, has moved forward in complying with ICE and other organizations tied to that. And we know as of today, all of the monies that were going to be going to our homeless populations or our unsheltered populations here in San Diego have been frozen because they need a guarantee from these organizations coming from the White House that they cannot give any resources to undocumented people. It's just such a cruel and evil sort of, you know, point. So those are the things that I can tell you that I know that are kind of moving and shaking here. Last week, we met with members of our administration to get support. We got verbal support. We're trying to, you know, move very, very carefully, but also hoping that, you know, what we talked about and what we said will be validated and put forward. I know at the high school level, because it's a big issue since we now have a graduation requirement in California, a lot of those programs have lost a lot of funding. But despite that, they're still trying to do the good work and trying to move forward with that. There was one other thing I was going to say. It escaped me right now. But in general, you know, that's what I can tell you. I know our friends in Tijuana are really suffering. They're very afraid to cross the border. People who have micas, you know, who have green cards, don't want to get entangled in any situation where they may lose them. So it is a difficult time.
Professor, can I?
The other thing that really concerns me, you're also a board member of the only Chicano museum in the United States and the largest open air museum in the state. I know, you know, you've been a board member there and, you know, advancing the culture and so forth. But I know that last year there was an incident, I believe, where a group of supremacists came to Chicano Park and were making just loud noise, threats were made and so forth. Do you see that happening again? Do you see more of that? And what can the museum do to protect itself and the community?
Well, one of the things that we can tell you is that the museum has come forward and declared itself a sanctuary. With regards to what's been happening at the park, we need to be aware that April 19th is our next Chicano Park Day. That's the 55th anniversary. And so, you know, have it very much under control, making sure, you know, we're watching everything that's going on because it is an open event. So that's up and coming. We did have, you know, problems with the Proud Boys and a group here in San Diego by the name of Patriots Fire. And that was about, oh, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. It did come up to a major event, but we turned it into a teaching moment, and we used it as a way to speak to the power of the work we do. And we were very much supported by a coalition of many people coming in to support that. So yes, definitely it's something that you think about it. I think that as it stands right now, any monies that are being brought into the museum that are federal funds, those of course are in question. I'm hearing as of today, the National Endowment for the Humanities is also coming up for question. And so, you just have to continue trying and working and doing the best you can with the vision that we're trying to promote something that is about our culture, about our history, you know, what we're being told is it has to be erased, that it has to be removed, and that's just completely unacceptable.
This is Dennis Bernstein with Miguel Gavilán-Molina. We're speaking with Professor Alberto Pulido. He is with the University of California in San Diego. He's on the board of the Chicano Park Museum. Professor, I really would like to get your gut reaction and a personal reaction. The idea of people are now being dragged off the street, if you will, being disappeared in North America. I mean, I did a lot of reporting around Chile, and I had reporters kidnapped, you know, from the ground, and they're there one day, and then you don't know where they are the next day, and we're seeing this unfold in our own country. Your gut reaction, your thoughts about this?
Wow. So inhumane, it's so shocking. It's I'm a bit, as you say, from a personal perspective, I'm very much a believer in our own human dignity and what it represents for our people from all over the world, and to single out people and questioning their humanity and their presence to me is so evil. I can't say it anymore stronger, because that's basically, we are devaluing humanity based on some category of if it be citizenship or if it be politics, and that's just unacceptable. I mean, that's, you know, it's hard to put into words. You just deal with it, you know, as you see it, and you're wondering what's next.
Do you know, does the administration of your school know what they might do? What would happen? Do they have plans? Because we're not talking metaphorical now. We're not talking make-believe. We're watching it happen day after day. I'm wondering if there are any plans on a university like your own near the border. Clearly, the folks are out to do damage, to hurt, to arrest. We now see, for instance, a man deported to El Salvador who's now been found innocent, but the U.S. government can't do anything about it. They say they can't do anything about it. So, plans for students in your university?
I don't really see anything happening at the administrative level. And if it is, we're not really hearing about that. We are protecting our DACA students. We are protecting our students who at some level could be vulnerable, but I don't see anything that's, you know, that's overt. I think maybe there's things maybe going on behind the scenes, but I haven't really experienced that. And as I mentioned, we got some support from administrators in terms of the work we're doing, but you know, we just don't know if something were to happen. We have an event next week talking about the prison industrial complex and immigration. Silky Shaw is going to be here on campus. We are hoping that that event will go well. We hope that we'll get some energy from that and continue to organize around the important work that we're trying to do here.
Beautiful. Well, listen, Miguel and I really appreciate you taking the time out to talk with us. We'd love you to come back and talk more about what's happening at the museum. I'm sure there's a lot of people in this country, in this audience, would love to know more about that as well. We thank you for taking the time. We wish you the best, and thank you for the incredible work you do as a teacher, as somebody who brings young people into the world and helps them expand their knowledge. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that very much, and my same to you, and that we may continue to do the good work and continue in the struggle, because it's very important. So thanks again.
All right. Thanks. We got arms locked. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Thank you, Miguel. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to remember the great work of Robert McChesney, who understood how important an independent media is and fought for one and used his brilliance to help the rest of the world understand what was happening to us in terms of corporate media and the loss of freedom and free speech. Stay with us. Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio is your daily investigative news magazine, and happy to welcome back to these airwaves Norman Solomon. Solomon is Executive Director of the Institute for Public Accuracy. He is deeply engaged with Roots Action. He has written many books, including War Made Invisible, How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine. Norman, thank you for joining us and helping us to remember somebody who is an extraordinary human being who made a great contribution to understanding what was happening to us in the corporate media and how it was flawed deeply from the get-go. We are talking about Robert McChesney, who passed away last week. Norman, welcome back to Flashpoints. Tell us something about who Robert McChesney was and what mark it was that he left on the world.
Well, Bob McChesney was a scholar and an activist, a combination that isn't as common as we would hope it would be in this country. And from very early on, back in the 1980s, he was writing about the ways in which corporate control was circumscribing people's sense of possibilities internally, in groups, in organizations, and in the media. And I first encountered him with his book that came out in 1993 called Telecommunications, Mass Media, and Democracy. It was an academic book that wasn't dry at all. And it dealt with the first years of radio. And basically, it came down to, he documented that it didn't have to be this way. If people turn the radio dial away from KPFA or a Pacifica station elsewhere in the country, they'll hear overwhelming cascades of garbage, of commercialism, of news and propaganda masquerading as journalism. And what Bob documented was that the airwaves were first owned by the people. They were owned by civic groups, granges, labor unions, and then the vultures came in, the big companies in the late 20s and in the 30s, and they transformed our very concept of what radio was and what it could be. And that's very much instructive and central to what Bob McChesney did for several decades. He said, look, it didn't have to be this way, but it is. So let's face facts. And in facing facts, he really pointed out that we still have an opportunity to change and get rid of the kind of control that's exerted over media in this country.
And here he makes the point, at the heart of the matter, maybe you can expand on this. He writes, Bob McChesney, who we lost recently, plenty of commentators loudly celebrate the internet. Some are vocal skeptics. Both camps, he writes, with a few exceptions, have a single deep and often fatal flaw that severely compromises the value of their work, McChesney writes. That flaw, simply put, is ignorance about really existing capitalism underappreciation of how capitalism dominates social life. Both camps miss the way capitalism defines our times and sets the terms for understanding not only the internet, but most everything else of a social nature, including politics in our society. So it's all about money. I'm sorry I screwed that up, but you know the quote, and talk about that.
Yeah, very much. It's all about money. It's all about massive, now billions of dollars in profits. And in his book that came out a dozen years ago called Digital Disconnect, Bob really targeted what he described, and I'm reading from that book here, the profit motive, commercialism, public relations, marketing, advertising, which he described as all defining features of contemporary corporate capitalism. He said those aspects are what he called foundational to any assessment of how the internet has developed and is likely to develop. And that's such a prophetic estimate and prognostication that came from Bob McChesney back in 2013, and it's been borne out, including with the outsized massive influence and power that these moguls, people like Elon Musk, people like Jeff Bezos, are exerting not only over the marketplace, but over the U.S. government, and really merging the two, which is a characteristic of fascism. When you have the big billion-dollar conglomerates, the individuals, the titans of industry, that become virtually indistinguishable from government. And by targeting capitalism, Bob was not being rhetorical. He was saying, look, this pervades people's lives. What they see, what they hear, what they read through media, what they are told is possible in terms of imagination and having a different kind of a world. His subtitle of his Digital Disconnect book is how capitalism is turning the internet against democracy. And he wrote at a time still when there was tremendous optimism and hype about, oh, you know, people can be in their garage in Silicon Valley. They were in Menlo Park, and they parked their car outside, and they created this wonderful startup, and they will do no evil. And Bob saw and made clear decades ago that this was just complete nonsense. He said, look, outfits like Google and Amazon and so forth, they will have two choices. He said, they will either be crushed by capital, or they will go along with and become the dominance from corporate capitalism over our lives. He said that that's the only way that they can grow. They will either grow or they will be crushed and not grow. And that is, unfortunately, when you read his books, you see how prophetic he was.
Where do you see the hope? Do you see some of his principles, his vision, being sustained, being a part of growing other media? How do you see this? Are we in real trouble given the nature of the corporate media?
Yeah, we're in, of course, huge trouble. Bob's hope, what he saw as hope, is in socialism. And he analyzed not only capitalism, but the antidotes to it, which would be that people organize, they mobilize, they break down these huge barriers to horizontal communication, and they have true democracy. And that's why the subtitle of his Digital Disconnect book referred to how the internet evolved in a corporate way against democracy. I remember I got to know Bob over the last 30 years. He lived in Madison, Wisconsin, and in 2016 and again in 2020, he would drive for hours to Iowa to go door to door to campaign for Bernie Sanders in the Iowa primary. And he saw that if you're going to defeat the oligarchy, you need to name it. You need to acknowledge it. The fact of oligarchy has to be not only recognized, but spoken about, analyzed, and fought against.
And, Norman, let me ask you, where's your hope in terms of possibility? How do you look at this? Where are you putting your cards in terms of, and resources in terms of, media?
Well, I'm lucky enough to work with a really great group of people at RootsAction.org, and one of them is India Walton, the Democratic Socialist who won the Democratic primary in Buffalo, only to be overturned by a cabal of Republicans and corporate Democrats. And we were having a discussion at a meeting a few months ago, and she said, the hope is in the struggle. And I think that is very real. It's, again, not a rhetorical statement. It is that when we're passive, when we watch, when we become spectators in this horror of capitalism running amok to the point that now we have such a fascistic government that is welcoming in the richest people in the world to run the government, that it's only through us organizing and being active that we can have any realistic hope at all.
That's the voice of Norman Solomon. Among his many books included War Made Invisible, How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine. Thanks, Norman, for helping us remember Robert McChesney. We really appreciate it, and we love the work that he did as well. We'll miss him. He'll be missed. Thanks.
Thank you, Dennis.
You're welcome. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. This is your daily investigative news magazine. I'm a little discombobulated today. Things are falling all over the place because I'm in the middle of moving. So sorry for any interruption. And we thank you once again for the privilege of broadcasting on free speech, no holds barred, non-corporate, truth to power radio, the People's Radio Network, the canary in the coal mine of corporate disinformation. Thanks for listening.
I'm Molly, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this special programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 4. Now through April, you'll hear different marathons and series, all brought to you by our fantastic programmers, including specials for Black History Month,